walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guests today are Mike Shoemate, the director of Pasco County Animal Services, which participates directly in the Pasco County Inmate Labor Program, which allows some inmates to work at the county's animal shelter. The inmates undertake various tasks at the shelter, cleaning kennels, refilling food and water bowls, walking the dogs, and more. For some time now, five inmates have reported, sometimes six, I guess, to the animal shelter five times a week. The work that they do at the shelter allows them to get some time shaved off their sentences. We're also going to speak with as many as six of those very inmates about their experiences at the shelter and what looking after the animals means to them, as well as talk with Sheriff Detention Deputy Chris Ruiz, who oversees the inmates while they're at the shelter. I think this may well represent the biggest group of guests ever on Talking Animals at one time, as we hear about the inmate labor program, its history, how an inmate qualifies, and more when we speak with Mike Shoemate, Chris Ruiz, Nicholas Voporis, Edgar Velez, Darren Sinoga, Angelo Osorio, Jesse Geiger, and Justin LeBaron in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the program, I'll speak briefly with Catherine Doyle, Director of Science, Research, and Advocacy for the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS, about the news that on Monday, California Governor Jerry Brown signed SB 1062, the bill to ban the use of bullhooks on elephants, which prevents circuses and other attractions that use bullhooks from doing business in the state. PAWS was a co-sponsor of the bill, and Doyle played a key role in the effort, having consulted on efforts to pass ordinances in other major U.S. cities, and in Rhode Island, the first state to pass a bullhook ban, which happened in July. We'll explore with Doyle the implications of this major legislative victory, what states may be next, and more. Right now, though, let's meet our large assembled group as we delve into inmates caring for animals at the Pasco County Animal Shelter, with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Mike Shoemate, Chris Ruiz, Nicholas Voporis, Edgar Velez, Darren Sinoga, Angelo Osorio, Jesse Geiger, Justin LeBaron to Talking Animals. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Duncan.
I hope, now, first of all, I hope I came pretty close to pronouncing everybody's name correctly. I did this sort of on the fly, so I'm delighted that we have everybody today, but it looked like just a little while ago that we weren't going to be fortunate enough to be able to speak with the inmates as well because of storm preparations and other things. So I hope I did justice to everybody's name, first of all.
Yes, sir.
Close enough.
All right, that'll work. So, Mike, let's talk a minute or two, and then, of course, Deputy Ruiz, along the way, you can jump in, and you guys, too. I'll probably pose specific questions to some of you guys, but there may be some things that come up. But I think just to get a few basics, I think we should just talk about the history of the program, not necessarily strictly at the shelter, but just the overall history of the inmate labor program. How long has the program itself been around? I assume it predates by some years the Animal Services Department getting involved.
Well, Duncan, appreciate you having us on. For us at the shelter here, it started about 2014, in October of 2014. Chris may be able to speak to it as far as the sheriff's office, if they've had any kind of inmate program before. I think they had some vocational stuff out at the jail, but Chris, you know anything about it?
No, I know at one point they tried to initiate an animal control program. It was a female-based program several years, but they retracted the program. I wasn't around to know the specifics, but we've had vocational programs for as long as I've been a member of the sheriff's office, as long as I can recall. Anything as far as catfish program, instruction programs, other county-based programs, road and bridge facilities, parks. We have several programs.
Deputy Ruiz, I remember things like from a different era, maybe the stool, but I mean inmates who had kind of this sort of privileges in exchange for helping out in one way or another, back in a certain day at least, were called trustees. Is that even a term that's still used? Or
It's a bit of an antiquated term, but it's still commonly used amongst some of the guys who have a little more experience and been in the industry for a while. The appropriate term that we use at the sheriff's office is inmate workers.
Okay.
But trustee gets thrown around a lot. It's a familiar term.
Yeah, it's just part of a different era, I guess, chiefly. So the program itself at the Animal Services, I think you said, Mike, began in October of 2014.
Yeah, we started with just one inmate crew. We actually would get them out here about a half a day to clean kennels, feed and water the animals, things like that. Then they would actually go to other departments in the county. They went to public works, facilities, parks, recs, and natural resources. I think Road and Bridge got them for, and those guys would split them up the rest of the week, different hours for different days. But we primarily had them, it was set up primarily for us initially.
It sounds like initially it was one inmate worker, and then did a number of workers as well as the number of days they were there expand, or how did that evolve over time?
Okay, we always had five inmate workers, and we had one deputy that pretty much was in control of the inmates, their movements, everywhere they went, scheduling, all that. He would get them ready at the jail and bring them out to all their work site and stay with them for the full day. So, like I said, we'd have them half a day and then they would go elsewhere. But the program was very successful. It was a benefit to the county because all we really were paying for was the deputy. The county had the vehicle. They loaned it out to the sheriff's office. We outfitted the deputy and paid salary, all that stuff, back to the sheriff's office. But for us to have to hire, five or six guys to do work for us for that time period, it would get quite expensive. So, it was a great savings to the county. I think last year in October 2015, the program was so successful that we went ahead and initiated three crews from the sheriff's office. We got one full-time now at Animal Services. I think Public Works gets one full-time, and then facilities and parks, I think they split their crew. But it's been very beneficial. The county ended up saving probably about $50,000 per inmate team. So it's worked out really well for us.
No kidding. And really, it sounds like just within a year's time of when it was launched that the expansion took place.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a very successful program. And like I said, a lot of benefit to the county. And quite frankly, the guys in the program, they do great work. So we haven't had really any issues from our side. A couple things probably more on our end than their end is like, inmates getting injured, possible dog bites, things like that. But I think we had that early on. Hopefully it's not as bad as it used to be. This year, now that we have them full-time, they clean in the morning, and then in the afternoons we get them to socialize some of the dogs, and they get some behavior training. We have a behavior coordinator on staff who actually trains the inmates and gives them some tips on how to handle the dogs, how to get them more socialized to do tricks and things like that. And what that does for us is that helps to get those dogs adopted a lot quicker. Most of the inmates, the dogs they work with, are the ones that just come into the shelter. So they're in a separate building from the adoption facility. And they take them through the whole process of kind of calming them down, get them oriented to the shelter, kind of oriented to shelter life, which is pretty stressful for dogs when they come into the shelter.
Of course.
And so they're handling some dogs with all kinds of temperaments, and they do a real good job at it.
And so, Mike, is the same, like, for example, the six inmate workers that have joined us today on the show, I think you mentioned that typically five are there. But, I mean, so whether it's five or six, is it the same five or six that are there today would be there tomorrow and Friday? In other words, is it pretty much the same throughout the week?
Generally it is, but, there's always, guys, getting out early.
Sure.
Doing different things, so there's replacements. The fact that we have six today instead of five is because one of our guys has been here for a while, is getting ready to get out and resume his life on the outside. So they've got six guys here training and ready to fill his spot.
I see. Because, yeah, I would think that if they're there every day, that just, especially when you're talking about the training and the behavior part of it, that if they really get familiar with those animals, that that helps in the whole process as opposed to a different set of folks coming in every day or a couple times a week. So they really get a bit more of a relationship and just get to know the animals' personalities and stuff, which probably also helps with training and ultimately helps with adoptions.
Yeah, it does. We've actually had some of the inmate workers, adopt out animals, or their families come in and adopt out an animal that they talk about or they've bonded with, and it works pretty good. Maybe even a deputy has adopted something.
A couple of us have adopted.
Oh, yeah? So, Deputy Ruiz, I take it you're maybe one of those?
Yeah, myself and another deputy in within the program who filled in for me a couple of times. We've become accustomed to some of the canines here, and you build a relationship and a rapport. And, you know, when you see that getting close to, you know, a situation where, you know, they need to find a home, and I did it. I fell in love with a bull mastiff here, and I'm still in love with her.
And now she's at home.
She's at home, and she's doing well, and she's loving life.
Nice. Well, that's great. Just in-house, we're seeing a rise in adoptions, it sounds like. That's great. But actually, one other quick question, Mike or Deputy Ruiz, and then I'd like to speak with some of the inmate workers as well. How are inmates eligible for the inmate labor program? What is the criteria to be part of this?
Well, basically, they can't be incarcerated on any heavy felonies or violent crimes or any lewd and lascivious acts in their history, and if they have anything of that sort, they can't be associated with the program. Generally speaking, most of the guys in the program are of minimum custody, some of the more familiar crimes that we come across. Guys in the program are DUIs, driving on suspended, petty theft, things along that nature.
I gotcha. So
the classification team generally handles that. You know, I just know the general guidelines.
Right. So certain kind of crimes and probably other, I don't know if there's other parts of their story or background that would make them likely candidates for the inmate labor program. But let's talk to some of our inmate workers, and we'll come back along the way, obviously, a little bit to you, Mike, and Deputy Ruiz. First of all, good morning, gentlemen, again. Which one of you is just about to get out, so it makes it 6 today instead of 5?
That'll be me, Mr. Velez.
Edgar?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So how long have you been part of the program over there at the animal shelter?
6 months.
6 months? That's a good long stint. Now, I'm sure you're on the one hand quite happy to be getting out, but how are you going to feel about maybe missing some of these animals you've been seeing almost daily for the better part of that 6 months?
Well, I'm going to be sad that I'm leaving because I got a certain rapport with quite a few dogs here. I'm glad that I've been part of the program. It's been very helpful for myself. You know, I've been trained several dogs that have been adopted, and the program's been very, very helpful for me.
It must be, I would guess, at least partially some mixed feelings. I mean, when you train those animals and they get adopted, I mean, that's obviously the goal, but especially if you've got some months with those dogs, do you feel kind of torn to say goodbye to them, even though you know they're going off to a good home?
Yes, absolutely.
And do you see yourself at a certain point maybe circling back and perhaps adopting one of these animals yourself?
Yes, I do.
Let's meet some of our other... Is it Nicholas? Did I say that correctly or not?
No, it's Nicholas.
Oh, it is Nicholas. Okay, because there's an O at the end. Maybe it's just a typo, but I thought it might be... Okay, so it's Nicholas. Okay, Nicholas, what do you like best about working at the animal shelter?
I like the bond with the animals. You know, you get to just get one-on-one with the dogs, so it really helps you do your time, I guess.
Yeah, because it sounds like that's going to make your time while you're in go faster and better, and also along the way, it sounds like you guys are learning some skills with the training and things that are good things to know, just whatever you end up doing later. And any of you guys can jump in on some of these things now. So I understand what you like best, you know, bonding and spending time with the animals, and makes your days obviously go a little bit better and faster. What, just to be honest, what don't you like as much about working over there at the animal shelter?
All the poop.
Yeah, I figured that was going to be kind of a universal answer, but feel free, anyone else, to jump in. So we've spoken with Edgar, we're speaking with Nicholas, we've got Darren, Angela, Jesse, and Justin also in the room there. So feel free, guys, anybody can offer anything, both about what you really like most about working at the shelter, and unless there's a different answer than the poo, if there's something else you don't like as much or don't, that isn't your favorite part of the gig.
Well, Justin would be our new guy to the group.
Okay.
He started days ago, so... you'll have some relative new perspective.
You know, I appreciate working with the dogs, you know, and getting out and easing that my mind. Working with the dogs, you know, relaxes my mind and makes the time go easier. It just gives us a little bit of transition to get ready to go back out into the community again and actually get the work ethic of actually living a normal life, waking up in the morning, going to work, back, you know, eating, relaxing, and appreciating, you know, the fact that we're getting that. And there's a lot of inmates that would love to do that, and that we're getting the perspective of doing that. You know, just the working part and living and transitioning to back to the community, you know, us working and maybe opening our eyes to having a better future instead of returning and having to become this program again. I mean, it's not something we want to keep being a frequent flyer, you know. It gives us a better transition, gives us a better outlook at what we could do to make ourselves more productive in the community and, you know, to our animals and, you know, a better way to take care of them. And anything we don't know in this program teaches us how to handle our animals and open our eyes to learn.
That's great. It felt like there'd be so many pluses to it. I mean, obviously just doing something during the day as opposed to kind of sitting around, I would think would make a big difference just by itself. But I was curious, and again, any of the six of you, feel free to jump in on this as well. To get this particular part of the inmate labor program, did you say, hey, I'd like to be part of the inmate labor program, but specifically I would like to work at the animal shelter? Can you state that preference, and how often does that preference, if you do ask for it, does that come through that way?
Well, generally speaking, Duncan, I get a file on these guys, you know, possible guys eligible for the program, and generally the first thing I look for is duration of the sentence, because I want guys who are going to be in the program for a while. The more experience they have in it, the higher probability they'll be successful in it. That's one of the things, and then I'll vet out with questions to every guy in the program. Do they have any experience with animals? Do they own animals? And, you know, one of the things classification already checks for is that there's no previous animal cruelty charges.
Sure.
So, you know, we don't have any significant issues there. But generally, the guys in this program, they've all, you know, stated to me that they had interest in it and that they have prior experience with animals. They may have owned them, or they may have worked in shelters, but generally speaking, that's what qualifies them.
Okay, so you're really kind of looking at their preference, and again, their record and their background. There's not really a particular measure in place to determine if a new inmate who would like to be part of the program is good with animals. It's just that you're going by their preference, maybe their experience, and making sure, obviously, there's no red flag, and otherwise you're just saying, hey, yeah, this inmate seems to be someone who'd like to be part of an inmate worker over at the animal shelter. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah. The biggest thing that I look for when I got a guy starting the program is obviously how they handle the dogs. I want to make sure these dogs are handled with a lot of care, you know, that there's safety in mind. You know, they keep, you know, we have some large breed dogs in here, and they can tend to overpower you if you let them. So I need to make sure everybody who's in the program has the capability of doing so, and we're also willing to do so, because I've had instances in the past where guys come into the program and they're scared, you know, just there's no other way of putting it. They're fearful of the dogs, and that affects the way they handle the dogs.
Yeah.
At that point, I have to make the assessment whether or not they can continue the program. Generally, guys in this program, the guys like Darren, he's been in this program the longest, 7 months, I believe, and, you know, it takes a certain amount of courage and a certain willingness and certain level of care to be successful in the program. And any of guys who, like Darren or Velez, who've been in it for a while, you know, they've demonstrated that. And it's not an easy thing to, you know, maintain. There's a lot of other applicants who are qualified to be in the program. And, you know, the guys who are in it, they steadily and consistently do a good job.
And Mike, do you or your staff sort of weigh in on that, working in tandem with Deputy Ruiz in that way and saying, hey, this guy looks good, this guy maybe seems a bit uneasy or nervous around the animals, maybe we should come back another time with him? Or, I mean, just as an example, are you guys giving input as well?
Yeah, not on the initial selection or anything, but once they get here and they start work, we do kind of observe, you know, we'll note if any guy is treating a dog, you know, inappropriately in any way, or if his work ethic, you know, he's just kind of not taking care of things. And if we have any issues whatsoever, you know, we've got a good working relationship with our deputy, and anything we ask or anything we add to their workload or, you know, any kind of new protocols, they're very quick to pick up on and it's worked out really well for us.
Sure.
In fact, Duncan, I'll tell you this. One of the benefits of this program for us out here at the shelter is the fact that previous to this, we were only open one day a week to the public beyond 5 o'clock. So it made it difficult for people to come out, reclaim animals, or adopt. But since this program started, we could free our staff up from cleaning that kennel, spread them out over the work week, and now we're open 5 days a week until 6:30. So it's really helped out.
That's great, because again, ultimately, this all seems about trying to get as many animals adopted. So it just seems like, obviously, if you're open that many more hours in a given week, that's the potential adoptions expand proportionately. So that's great.
Absolutely.
Not to mention the financial savings that you mentioned earlier. So, and Mike, you and the others have mentioned a few times dogs. Is it strictly dogs, or are there cats at the shelter as well?
There are cats at the shelter, but they're over mostly in the adoption facility.
Yeah.
That's not part of the program for these guys.
I got you. So for folks just tuning in, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We are discussing the inmate labor program that enables inmate workers to help out at Pasco County Animal Services in various capacities with the dogs and kennels and walking dogs. So we're speaking with Mike Shumate, the director of Pasco County Animal Services, Sheriff Detention Deputy Chris Ruiz, and we're speaking with six of those inmates, including Nicholas Voporas, Edgar Velez, Darren Sinoga, Angelo Osorio, Jesse Geiger, and Justin LeBaron. I'm hoping my percentage of proper pronunciations is going up each time. Let's hope. So there are a few couple of calls that are holding. Let's get some other folks involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with our group. Did you have a question or comment?
Oh, yeah. How about it?
Yeah, it's your turn. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I actually called earlier to talk about that election yesterday. Missed part of your show, but I was listening. I'm sorry to bother you, but
okay.
I love your show, Duncan.
All right, well, that's very nice. All right, thanks. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. We're talking about the Pasco County Animal Services and the Inmate Labor Program, allowing inmates to help out there. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have both.
Okay.
In the first place, I actually had to be honest. I live just down the road from Pasco County Animal Services by about 150 feet. I'm at the end of a dead-end road that's just down from there. And the first thing I want to do is commend the Pasco County and the people at Pasco County for all the work they've done, and including the inmates. Okay? It's been a wonderful program. I'm very much aware of it. I try to work with them because, as being in the neighborhood, one of the problems we suffer all the time is that when people go to animal control and it's not open or it's not accepting animals, they bring those animals down my road and dump them off. So my neighborhood deals with this all the time. They have been very good helping us to deal with the issue that we dropped off animals. I just want to say that the program that they put forward with the inmates is great. The problem for Pasco County is their failure to have moved their facility when they chose to build a new one over by the jail, making it simple for people in Pasco County. Because anyone who lives in Pasco knows that the facility is at the end of a dead-end road in the middle of nowhere and way far for anyone like, let's say, Hudson or Spring Hill areas or Dade City come here to deal with the issues of animals. And the county, right, these guys, they're doing a wonderful job, the county should have moved this facility right into the jail system, right over there off of 41, so that they could have actually made it more central to people in Pasco County. Something that would actually benefit. Right now, we're close to the Hillsborough County line of Pasco.
Okay. Well, I think I got your question. For some reason, the connection isn't great, so I'm gonna thank you for your call and try to restate what your question seemed to be, which largely, if I understood you, was about the location of the shelter. And sounds like you wished there was a different location, which I gather you think would be more productive in terms of adoptions and other services. So, Mike, I don't know if you want to speak to that at all. Or
yeah, I think the shelter was here before I got here. It's been here a long, long time. I think that's probably why they went ahead and built a new facility right on the same property that they had here. But, I have to agree with our neighbor. It's not the most convenient location. We're tucked way behind a subdivision and a elementary school. We're kind of out in the middle of nowhere, but we're centrally located in the county, but off of a major highway like 41 and by the jail would have been a much nicer facility or location anyway for folks to get out to adopt and certainly would have been a little more convenient for a program like this.
Hard to do much about it, I guess, at the moment, other than just to note that it's not ideal, but I don't think anybody at the moment has the resources to probably really think seriously about relocating things for the time being.
Yeah, he was correct. I mean, there's a lot of folks that, they'll just come and drop their dogs before we open, or, you know, yesterday we found a box of chicks left at the gate, you know, before we got here. So it happens quite frequently, and I'm sure that, you know, he's taken in a few animals and brought a few to us. So but we appreciate our neighbors. They've been very patient with us.
Well, that reminds me, Mike, when we were sort of trading emails yesterday, there was a possibility, I think I mentioned at the top of the show, that with storm preparations and other things, that maybe the inmate workers that we are lucky enough to have join us today might not have been available because there might be working on sandbags and other things. And there's just a lot of things that can affect a shelter in a given day. And another thing that you had mentioned that I think pulled your colleague, who we were originally going to include in the conversation as well, off was there was a chicken hoarding case. And, you know, hoarding to me is obviously a disturbing problem, but most of us, I think, would think of hoarding of cats and or dogs. Talk just for a moment. We'll come back, of course, to the other stuff in a moment, but I'm just curious to talk a little bit about chicken hoarding. How often do you see that? Does it work the same way that we're familiar with people who do hoard cats or dogs?
It's not usually the thing that you see. You are correct. I mean, we had three cases last week of hoarding dogs and cats, and we pulled in about 50 animals from those three cases. This case was more of a code violation within one of our municipalities, and the code officers went out there, and of course they can't deal with the chickens, and the sheriff's ag unit, agricultural unit, was there on scene as well. So they assisted us, and we took custody of all the chickens. It was about 112 or 14. We're still trying to get the full count, and we had a couple turkeys involved. But yeah, it was two houses, and the lady, was involved with that. So I think they got it cleared out.
Well, so it's always something tricky and challenging over there, I guess, at the animal shelter. So let me, again, let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We are chiefly talking about the Pasco County's Inmate Labor Program, which enables inmate workers to help out at the Pasco County Animal Shelter. So as part of this conversation, we're speaking with Mike Shumate, the director of Pasco County Animal Services, Sheriff Detention Deputy Chris Ruiz, and six of those inmate workers, Nicholas Foporas, Edgar Velez, Darren Sinoga, Angelo Osorio, Jesse Geiger, Justin LeBaron. Let me come back, if I could, to some of our inmate worker friends there. So a couple of you have mentioned like what you like about it, but maybe especially those who haven't had a chance to speak up, and others too, if you have already talked. What's the appeal, especially, I think it was Darren, I guess you've been helping out in this capacity for 7 months. Are there certain things that you could point to that, especially over a longer haul, that really make a difference to you and have made a difference to your life, the appeal of going over to the animal shelter every day?
Yeah, definitely. Well, all the crews, we work really hard, but I think at the dog pound here, we get a chance to actually help these dogs get adopted. And I feel like we actually make a difference. Like when I first started, we were actually a county work crew, which we came here. We just cleaned the kennels, left, and did other stuff. But over time, it kind of expanded to us being here all day. And at first, really, we still did the same thing, cleaned the kennels. And then we really just took the dogs out and played with them. And now we have training sessions with Miss Lisa, which are great. We help teach these dogs tricks and traits that help them get adopted, and I feel like that's really the best part, is making a difference in these dogs' lives and helping them get out of the shelter.
Sure. Anyone else want to speak up about what appeals to you sort of day in and day out and how it affects you or helps you at the moment?
This is Angelo. How you doing, Duncan?
Hey, Angelo.
One of the things I really like about the program is that we're just not making a difference in the animals' life. We also help build different obstacle courses for them, which helps their ability to go ahead and run around free. I think that's really special and something that, you know, you look at the dogs, they're not caged up all the time. They're running around free. They're learning tricks. I like that a lot.
Well, a dog that's getting that kind of exercise is a happy, healthy dog, and again, probably more likely to be adopted when people come by the shelter.
Exactly.
And how does it, you guys can talk about this, or Deputy Ruiz, how does this, helping out at the animal shelter, how does that affect the sentence that a given inmate worker may have?
Well, essentially, inmates who's incarcerated at the county jail are going to receive 5 days of good gang time, as long as they don't have any disciplinary actions taken against them which would also affect, you know, their status in this program. And in addition to being an inmate worker, they get additional 5 days, so they're getting 10 days off their sentence each month. So it's very beneficial for them to get back to the norm, get back to their family, and, you know, and feel like they did it the hard way. And, you know, they generally leave with a higher sense of pride when they leave from programs where they were actually, you know, doing hard, strenuous work, or where they felt that they were making an impact and a difference.
No, that's great. And again, with some specialized skills that either, some cases professionally, but certainly personally, they can take with them from the experience as well. So,
yeah, they leave the program with a certificate, giving them a certain amount of accredited hours that's provided by Animal Control, which, you know, I've talked to a couple guys who left the program and, you know, seeking employment in, you know, animal-related fields like, you know, Petco, PetSmart, private practices, and, you know, gives them a greater opportunity, a higher probability of getting those jobs.
And Deputy Ruiz, what's the average sentence that an inmate worker that would be helping out at the animal shelter would have?
We try and look for a minimum 90 days. Like I said, there's a lot of specified training we receive from Animal Control. And we were trying to find guys who can, you know, be in the program for as long as as long as possible. So we generally try and get 90 days. Anything greater than 90 days is just more beneficial for everybody involved.
And I think this is probably impractical just because of the county facility there. But sometimes you hear about or read about or see films, documentaries or whatever about programs where inmates are actually caring for dogs and helping train them in their cells. Is that ever anything that could be an offshoot of this program?
Hopefully in the future, you know, me and Mike were literally just having that discussion right before we got on the phone with you, you know.
Oh, okay.
Who knows what the future holds? Hopefully this program continues being successful and it continues to expand. I'm optimistic about it.
That's great. Good. I just thought there might be some inherent limitations there, including the brevity of the sentences, which is one of the reasons I wanted to ask about that. But that's great that that might well be possible. So I think we've reached just about the end of our time. Actually, we have put one more call on just because I'd like to have one more voice involved if we haven't had enough. But hi, you're on Talking Animals. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I was curious about these chickens they got hoarded. Are they looking for homes for them?
Mike, do you want to speak to that briefly?
Yeah, not right now. We're still, we're just holding them in custody right now, waiting on the case to be resolved. So we're not looking for homes at this point.
So how's one find out whether you are or not and when you are?
You can call us here at the at Animal Services and leave us your name and number. And if we do get custody of the animals on a, you know, permanent basis, then we'll certainly be looking to get them out to good homes.
Well, me and my neighbor's looking for, we would take the land hen.
Okay.
Okay, so
call.
Yeah, so Mike, maybe if you don't mind saying the phone number there, I was going to give the website in a sec anyways, but maybe just for people for one reason or another want to contact Animal Services, what's the best number to call? Thank you for your question, caller. Sorry, go ahead, Mike, sorry.
Area code 813-929-1212.
Okay, great. And again, there's a website, of course, pascocountyfl.net/PAS. Takes you directly to the Animal Services portion of the Pasco County website, and there is as well a Facebook page. So there's all kinds of ways to kind of track what's going on and see some of these animals, and we hope adopt more. And thank you very much, gentlemen. So we've been speaking again with Mike Shoemate, Chris Ruiz, Nicholas Vaporis, Edgar Velez, Darren Sinoga, Angelo Osorio, Jesse Geiger, and Justin LeBaron. So thank you very much, one and all, for joining us today on Talking Animals, and thanks for all your great work and help with those animals.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
In a few moments, I'll speak with Catherine Doyle of PAWS about the new bullhook ban in California bill signed Monday by that state's governor, Jerry Brown, a significant development for anyone who cares about elephants. Right now, it's time to step into the comedy corner. We're going to hear a portion of a piece by Pete Holmes called Dropped a Dog in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
I recently dropped a dog. Oh, that's okay. Hear the empathy noise. I didn't wound a dog. I'd be crazy if I was like, okay, show's going pretty good. What next? I killed a dog. You know those things everyone loves? I ended one. I wouldn't tell you guys if I did that. I would save that for my serial killer journal. Just like, could man be so sweet? Is that just me? That's the craziest thing about serial killers is the journaling. I understand killing some people, but who wants to go home like, big day? Take it easy, Doogie Howser. You killed a lot of people today. Take it easy. So I dropped a dog. I didn't know you can't. Did you know? Maybe there's one person I'm helping. You can't drop dogs. If you want to put a dog down, they're like little old people. They need help. They have arthritis and joints. They're like, ah, be gentle. You gotta be gentle. If you want to put a dog down, you have to kneel as if before a king and lay it down. If there's mud, put your jacket down. They need our help. I was raised with cats. You can bowl a cat. Do you understand? You can't hurt a cat. They're infallible. They're like the Pope or a Pharaoh. You can't hurt a cat. You can pick up a cat any way you want. You can grab a cat by the fat behind its neck. It'll yield to that move from its youth, straight up with that look on its face like, this is degrading us both.
That was Pete Holmes with part of a piece called Drop the Dog, taken from his album Nice Try, The Devil. Now let's move into my conversation with Catherine Doyle of Paws about the significant bullhook ban in California signed on Monday by Governor Jerry Brown. Indeed, let's welcome Catherine Doyle back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. So let's jump in. Tell us first about this new ban and what it actually means.
Well, pretty simple. As of January 1st, 2018, bullhooks are no longer allowed to be used on elephants in our state.
And how many circuses, I mean, we've talked, not surprisingly, a number of times on this show about Ringling's decision to suspend the use of elephants in their touring circus troops, but how many circuses still routinely travel with elephants that might otherwise come through California?
Coming through California right now, there are actually none.
So even before the ban, just because it was looming, or?
I would say that, because it was looming, but also, well, like you said, Ringling had decided to stop, you know, using its elephant axe, and also because, quite honestly, there's always a lot of opposition here to circuses that were using elephants, and I think because of that pressure, I know one circus would come to California, it would travel with elephants in other states, but not in California.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're pretty strong in our opposition here in the state.
That's great, but I mean, it's great that almost in sort of an anticipatory way that some of the other, because here at least, I can't think of the name right now, in the mail, out of the blue, in fact, I got a big stack of tickets from a circus that had a big picture of an elephant in it. It was coming to West Palm Beach, and I think there was some other dates over on this side of the state, and it feels like there's a few others that still at least tour part of the country with elephants, but they ain't coming to California, apparently.
No, they are not.
And just out of curiosity, if one did, especially like, let's say, a smaller operation or even just sort of a roadside attraction that somehow had an elephant involved, is there any grace period in the bill that Governor Brown just signed?
Well, like I said, it'll go into effect on January 1st, 2018. Because right now we just have two exhibitors in the state that are using bullhooks with their elephants. And the idea of setting that date was to give them time to make adjustments and to start handling their elephants in protected contact.
I see. Okay, so there is some time. But let's say that, and again, obviously you're going to be plugged into anybody on any level who has an elephant, especially in any kind of performing setting or anything else. So I'm just curious, though, if there were just a one-man band that somehow had an elephant or whatever, I mean, if someone on any level were to be caught or spotted using a bullhook, what sort of consequence is there?
Oh, well, there's going to be a fine, and then also potentially losing their permit to be able to keep elephants in the state.
Okay, so it's pretty serious.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. How many zoos, to your knowledge, in California still have bullhooks as part of?
Well, I'm very proud to say that none of the zoos in California, none of the AZA-accredited zoos in California use bullhooks and haven't for about 10 years now. And, of course, at PAWS, we've never used them. But, yeah.
Right.
In fact, we enjoyed the support. We had the support of the California Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and we really appreciated them, their strong support for this bill.
Right. So, again, the only, I guess, exceptions to that would be people who train elephants that get used in TV and film, or, again, maybe a smaller, let's just say, shadier operation. But otherwise, any accredited zoo there doesn't use bullhooks and has not for a decade.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
So what do you think the implications, I think I mentioned in the introduction earlier in the show at least, that Rhode Island passed a similar ban to the California one in July. So what does this start to mean on a larger scale? Are there implications that we have here?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a reflection of the changes in public attitude toward the use of wild animals for performances. I mean, that's certainly evident. And I'm hoping that the outcome of this is that we are going to be seeing in other states, but if it's cities, if it's counties, states, that we are going to be seeing more of these laws, and not just bullhook bans, but also bans on performing wild animals.
So you're obviously called on to help either testify about these or consult on cities or now states, I guess, that are trying to enact these bans. First of all, is there, maybe you can't say, but is there a state or two that you think is going to be next up after California and Rhode Island just before that?
Actually, yeah, I really can't say right now.
Yeah.
We have to take a look. And these things, they aren't easy. It isn't, just because there's two states that have passed it now. I do think the train's out of the station. We are rolling along now, but it's never easy to get this legislation. And in our case, it took 2 years here to get it. And which, in fact, to tell the truth, compared to, say, Rhode Island, it's taken much, much longer. In fact, my colleague, Nicole Paquette at the Humane Society of the United States, deserves so much credit for that. She's worked for years and years to get a bullhook ban in Rhode Island, and I was just happy to be there to work with her and support her.
When you find like as much resistance as you noted in California, I mean, what are the main sources of opposition? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some financial interest on people who still want to use bullhooks on elephants, but I mean, is there also just in legislative circles and others, people who either don't understand or just don't want to support that kind of ban?
Well, certainly it's a education process for our legislators, but we had overwhelming bipartisan support here, and we had these huge votes, and again, like I said, bipartisan. So, and I think that, again, that just reflects changing attitudes in society. And of course, the opposition, you're always going to have, holdouts, of course, and you're going to have people who are exploiting elephants, as part of, for their businesses or making money off of them.
Yeah.
And who don't want to change. And so, like I say, you have these, holdouts that are kind of clinging to these archaic and inhumane devices. But I think the writing's on the wall that, times are changing, and they're going to have to make whatever adjustments in order to continue to, do what with
yeah.
the elephant. Hopefully send their elephants to, a better place or a better life. But certainly they are going to have to make adjustments to these changing laws and changing public attitudes.
Do you expect, since we're so closely with so many of these bans that, in cities and now states, that the fact that California, which, I mean, it's great that Rhode Island did it in July, but I think in some ways the fact that California did it would be, I think, influential in some other ways, and as you say, the attitude's changing amongst the public, and therefore, I guess, in the legislative chambers as well. Do you think it'll be progressively easier to get other bans pushed through at other states?
I would hope so, but, in one way, because states, a lot of politicians in states, they don't want to be the first to do something.
Right.
So now that there's precedent, I think that will definitely help, but like I said, legislation is still never easy to pass, and you do have the opposition from people that are continuing to exploit elephants, and unfortunately, we have the support of the California Association of Zoos and Aquariums, but in other states, there are zoos that are going to be opposing, sadly enough,
because they do still use bullhooks in their control of elephants.
Yeah, there are still some zoos that are using bullhooks, and there are other zoos that I think are that even don't have elephants that are sympathetic to those zoos. And again, I just think it's going to take time. Change is never easy, right?
No, for sure. And again, I think this is really good to get, not great, but I mean, it's really important to get into this, because you would think the first part of our conversation would, to me, be a reason for a lot of optimism. There's just going to be momentum building and other states will kind of fall in line behind this. But obviously there's other factors at work that will keep that from being quite that smooth.
I do think Rhode Island and, California helped pave the way, that's for sure. But again, it's like I said, legislation is never easy, no matter what issue I think you're working on. But I think we do look forward to, to implementing even more of these laws, on behalf of not just elephants, but other performing wild animals.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, this is, I think, great news, and I know that you were instrumental in helping get this to happen, and again, you're helping out with other efforts in other states and cities, and we can send people, obviously, to the PAWS website, which is PAWS, P-A-W-S, web.org, to find out all about PAWS, but also including these kinds of efforts and the latest news about this ban in California. So thanks for your ongoing efforts on behalf of elephants and our other animal friends, and thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Talking Animals. The show website is Talking Animals. And it's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Likely take any of our guesses off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loy is up next. It amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. Be back next Wednesday with another edition of the show. Meanwhile, please stay tuned, of course, keep it always on WMNF 88.5 or WMNF.org for storm information and updates regularly. And please, I hope you'll also visit TalkingAnimals.net where you can find audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast, iTunes Podcast 2, and there's links to the Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond, community conscious radio. Stay informed here at WMNF with all the weather news and more. Stay safe, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.